Good evening. We are finishing up our study in biblical evidences. The last section here has been on really a response to biblical criticism or the critic or the skeptic. And we started out looking at the idea of the canon. How did we get those books? Because the criticism is oh, you know, you really don't have these books that you have that you call your New Testament. That was just arbitrarily put together by Constantine or by someone else. Now, hopefully we've shown that that's not the case. The second criticism is, well, the books that you do have, the words in there are really not very reliable. And this is the idea of this form criticism that we talked about last time, about them trying to peel the layers of the onion back to get at the true words of Christ. And hopefully we've seen that's not a very reliable or a very valid criticism or sound criticism. We ended up at this slide last time talking about or about to show some of the arguments against form criticism. I think by the examples that we showed, we actually show the third point there about the subjective nature of this criticism. When we look at this criticism, you read through it and you're like, really? You look at this passage and get out of that this isn't reliable? And so there's a problem there. Several other things that I thought of when we were looking at this idea of form criticism. Remember, the basis is that we had this oral tradition that developed in the church that was only later written down and edited by the gospel writers. But when you really think about that, you're like, wait a minute, if we go back and look at history, and yes, I realize that there was false doctrine that eventually made it into the church, but really when you look at the early church fathers, the first problem in the church as far as doctrinal was really the development of what's called the monarchical bishop. In other words, the one elder became the chief elder that became the bishop. That was actually hundreds of years after the close of the first century. During that time, doctrinally speaking, there's good evidence that everything was just the way we practice when we talk about New Testament Christianity. That was really it. And when you think about that, you're like, wait a minute, if this was all just an oral tradition, and if you remember back to where this idea of form criticism came from, this idea of form criticism actually grew out of looking at fairy tales and looking at folk tales and looking at the evolution of the way stories occur. And you say, well, if that was actually the way that this happened, then we should have seen just doctrinal discord right off the bat. And we really don't see that. There were really no divisions in doctrine or theology for hundreds of years in the early church. And finally, it's based really on the assumptions that the accounts are not true. And this gets back to the drumbeat of worldview. Is these historians, these skeptics, start out with just the assumption that they're not going to these documents, to the Gospels, to the Scriptures, wanting to find out the truth of them. They're assuming they're not true to begin with. That's really not a really great place to start. Any questions, comments on the idea of form criticism before we move on a bit? We're not going to leave this entirely because, remember, this started out in the 1920s. And things like this, they start in academia, okay, in the ivory towers, but slowly but surely they get into more mainstream areas. You may have heard about the Jesus Seminar. And this is something that developed in the 80s and 90s, I think about 85, Robert Funk and others. These were about 150 scholars that got together and did this thing called the Jesus Seminar. And there's several books about this. And this is just really the modern version of form criticism. These scholars got together and said, hey, you know, we really don't have the actual words of Jesus. We've got the words of Jesus, and then it's got this layer that the church put on top of it in this narration and this myth, this mythology that went together that formed the Gospels. And so what we're going to do is we're going to go back and we're going to see if we can't peel these layers out and really get at what Jesus actually said historically. And so they look at things like, this thing? Yeah. There we go. Again, they're looking that at this as purely a historical thing. They do not believe that Jesus was the Son of God. He was only a historical figure. Again, that the Gospels were late writings after an oral history. And then they start taking things like the Q document, which really isn't a document. I'll talk about it in just a minute. And the Gospel of Thomas, one of the Gnostic Gospels, and the Gospel of the Hebrews. And they take those and they hold them up on the same level that of the canonical Gospels. And they say, okay, now we're going to look at all of this and we're going to see if we can't dig into this and see what Jesus actually said. And then they vote on it. Isn't that fun? Hey, let's all get together and vote on what the words of Jesus are. And you can actually buy a Bible. They've got a color coding system where you can look and they say, okay, this guy, I don't remember what the colors are. But here, we've taken the Gospels and we've color coded them. So here's the one, I think it was like in red was actually, you know, what they thought Jesus said in black was, no, he didn't say. I may have that backwards. But isn't that something? You know, all right, we're going to vote on whether we think Jesus actually said these things or not. Let's completely forget about what all of the church fathers said and all the evidence we have and the multiple witnesses and the four gospel writers. No, let's take a vote. Just to follow up on that you'll hear things like the Q document, which is from the German Quelle or source. And this comes from the two-source hypothesis. I'm not going to spend a lot of time with this. I don't want to bore you with this. But remember the worldview. The worldview is these are just historical documents. And so when we read through these, we see that there is a remarkable amount of similarity between Matthew and Luke and Mark. And the assumption is made that Mark was written first. And so we look and we analyze the different Gospels and we see the pattern and the similarities between Matthew, Luke, and Mark. And so we say, okay, Matthew and Luke, they copied Mark. But then there are all of these passages where Matthew and Luke agree, but Mark doesn't agree with them. So there's this hypothesis then that there was this other document called Q. And so if we have the Q document and it's been lost, we don't know what it is, we don't know where it is, but we've got this other document out there that was more of an oral sayings gospel. And so if we combine all of this together, then we get Matthew and Luke. Now, having other sources or having sources available for the writers is not a problem. I mean, if you think of what Luke said, what did Luke say at the beginning of his gospel? Hey, I did some research here. I went and interviewed people. So it's not unreasonable to think that the gospel writers may have had certain writings. The problem is when you start hypothesizing and theorizing that, well, Q's got this stuff in it that is not what's in the canonical gospels. So it's kind of a slippery slope idea. And then we add on top of that things like the Gospel of Thomas. Okay, well, let me back up before I move on to the Gospel of Thomas. I'm not going to read all of that to you. I just wanted to put in that for documentation. Of course, if you read this, it's going to say that the majority of the scholars believe in this document. Well, there's a lot of dissent there too, and there's a lot of good arguments against the existence of this Q document. One of them is that there are times when Matthew and Luke, Matthew knew Mark, but not each other. The minor agreements call into question the proposition that Matthew and Luke knew Mark, but not each other. So there's areas where Matthew and Luke have the same type reading in the passage, but they differ from Mark, even though it's the same total passage in Mark, if that makes sense. One of the biggest arguments against the existence of the Q document is where is it? Okay, we know that the early Christians wanted these documents. They wanted to preserve these documents. They passed them from church to church. They copied them. They spread them. And so you're telling me there's this major sayings document that just got lost to history. So again, this is kind of a hypothetical thing. So you take the idea of Q and then you add to it. I'm not going to talk about the synoptic problem. You take it and you take one of the major Gnostic gospels like the Gospel of Thomas. And the Gospel of Thomas really threw fuel on the fire in the 1960s, well, I believe it was more, no, 1940s. when it was discovered, because it was one of the major Gnostic Gospels that had been referenced. We had historical references to it, but we didn't have an actual copy. And so they did some digging in, I think, Nag Hammadi in Egypt, and found these documents. And we understand, or we think we have a clear idea, that these Gnostic documents were gotten rid of because they were just considered heretical. And so that's why we didn't have any copies of this, is because the church just considered it false doctrine as it is. But boy, this just really inflamed these guys' imagination. Oh, let's look at this. Let's look at this sayings gospel. And it's not really a gospel the way we think of a gospel. Our gospels have the narration, the parables, the healing, the miracles, all of that intertwined to tell the story of Jesus, to convince people that he is the Son of God. Gospel of Thomas is just sayings of Jesus. So again, they take the idea of Q and the idea of the Gospel of Thomas, put them on the same level as the canonical Gospels, and then try and get out of that what Jesus actually said. Now, what's really interesting to me about problem with things like the Gospel of Thomas is, if you actually read them, I read it years ago, is there are some really interesting passages that I'm like, really? You want to accept this? Here's one of them. That's actually one of the last verses. It says, Simon Peter said to them, let Mary go away from us, for women are not worthy of life. Hey, ladies, how you like that one? Jesus said, look, I will draw her in so as to make her male, so that she may too may become a living male spirit similar to you. But I say to you, every woman who makes herself male will enter the kingdom of heaven. Boy, that sounds just like something Jesus would say, right? Well, no. And so when we look at these Gnostic Gospels, okay, we can see very much right away that they are not in harmony with the Scriptures. Any comments, questions on this section? Yeah, that's right. Thomas was too here, yeah. Okay, so to get us back on track here a minute, here are these criticisms. Don't have the right books, okay, this idea of canonicity. The canonical books are not reliable, form criticism, and now it's modern evolution into the Jesus seminar. And then also, several other criticisms, the canonical Gospels were not written by their named authors. You'll hear that a lot. Like, oh, Matthew wasn't really written by Matthew, and Mark really wasn't written by Matthew. Those were just names that were tacked on later by the church to give them authority. Okay, and so we're going to look at that in just a minute. And the final one, too, that we're going to look at is the Gnostic Gospels are just as legitimate as the canonical ones. I put this up here like this because I really want to combine 3 and 4 there a bit, because this is going to get a bit repetitive. Because the same arguments that we're going to make for like the canon are the same kind of arguments that we're going to make for the rest of this too. And that is, hey, let's go back and look at this history here. Let's look at the men that wrote right after the apostles and let's see what they have to say. And so if we look at people like Tertullian and Clement and Irenaeus of Lyon and the Muratorian fragment and Justin Martyr and Papias. And notice we've got the dates there. For you think about Papias, okay, who we believe knew John, who was probably a teenager at the time that John died. We have good evidence that he was with John. Going forward through time, each of these men wrote documents that talk about Matthew writing Matthew and Mark writing Mark and Luke writing Luke and John writing John. They all reference these. Not only do they reference them in the writings that they have, but they also reference them with the authors. Now, I know this next slide is going to be very busy. Violates all the rules of PowerPoint presentations. Okay, but it's one of the best slides that I've seen, not only to talk about the authorship of the New Testament, but also this idea of the Gnostic Gospel. So I'm going to skip in, I'm going to add in that last point, this idea that, oh, hey, you know, these Gnostic Gospels are just as legitimate. Okay, so, and I stole this from Dr. Timothy McGrew. I was looking at one of his lectures. He's an apologist and a professor at Western Michigan University. And I just love the slide. So it took me a little while to Google and find it and get it off of the lecture. But I just loved this because it's so very powerful. What we have here is we have across the top all of the early and middle church fathers. So Ignatius, Polycarp, Marcion. Now, Marcion and Valentinian, these guys here in red, these guys are heretics. They're Gnostics. That's going to be important here in just a minute. So we've got Justin Martyr, Irenaeus, Clement of Alexandria, Tertullian, the Marcion Canon, Origen, Eusebius, and on down the line. I said on the down the line because I don't remember these on the end. And the check mark means that they quote it and attribute it and agree with it. So just like we would write a sermon or write a letter and quote, you know, Paul or quote the Gospels in a positive light, that's what these men did. Okay? So you see a check mark, all right? That's a positive affirmation. A dot means we have nothing. We don't have any record whatsoever. An X is I'm quoting it, but I'm disagreeing with it. Okay? I'm attacking it. All right, so notice something. Here are all of these Gnostic Gospels. Here are our Gospels and Acts. Notice an interesting pattern here. I mean, all of these, and this is hundreds of years, by the way. I believe this is in chronological order, okay? From probably like 120 AD up to probably 400. All right, all of these guys are talking about our Gospels and Acts. And now look at this. Marcion and Valentinian, both of these guys are not, they don't like the way things the scriptures say. Okay? But look what they're doing. They're quoting them and disagreeing with them, or quoting them. I know that's kind of unusual. People will quote and agree and then go on later to give their ideas. All right? That's what's happening there. But notice these Gnostic guys. One quote from the Gospel of Truth. No quotes from anything else. We don't get anything major until Origen, okay, comes along, I believe, 4th century, and just blasts it all. Gets all of these Gnostic Gospels and then just rips them up. Criticizes them. Attacks them. So, first of all, what does that tell you about authorship? All of these guys were in agreement. Hey, this is who wrote the Gospels. Here's who we're quoting from. Good. No, I didn't get into that. And he didn't get into it on his lecture either, so I don't know. Said, correct. Could something be something very benign? So, and I do want to give credit where credit's due. Okay, this slide I typed out, copied and pasted, and of course this one obviously I stole. Both of those slides are a little over an hour lecture. Of course, there's a lot of other slides. So if you get on YouTube and look at this, if you really want to get into these, he actually goes on. I thought it might get a little long and boring to actually go through each and every one of the quotes of these, showing their quotes and what they said. He does that. Okay, so if you're really interested in looking at this, by all means, please go look at those lectures. He has several others as well along these lines. But I just, when he hit that, I was like, ooh, I gotta have that slide. That's a pretty powerful slide. Okay, any questions, comments on that? Okay. Other modern, applications to this. Anybody read Da Vinci Code? Anybody want to admit that they read the Da Vinci Code? I did. I saw one brave soul up there saying that they read it. It's an interesting piece of fiction. If you keep reminding yourself that it is indeed fiction, the ideas here are not new. And you're like, why are you doing? I think I looked it up. I'm wanting to say this was like 2004. The movie was like in 2006. So this is getting a little old, okay? The tide has already come and gone with the controversy that something like this, you know, put out. But I do want to bring it up because we know how things go, don't we? Things kind of go in cycles. You know, something will hit like this and cause a lot of stir, and then it'll fade away for a little while, and before you know it, somebody else comes up with something similar. So I think it's worth our time to look at. If you're not familiar with the Da Vinci Code, it's a story. It's a thriller, but the background is really this idea of the Templars and the things that they did. They're looking for these secrets. I'm not going to spoil it. I guess I shouldn't. But really, there's nothing new in the Da Vinci Code. A lot of this came from an older book, I believe in the 80s, Holy Blood, Holy Grail. And this can be summed up by one of the quotes by one of the major characters. I think it was a professor, Teebling, in this. I'll read this. It says, and remember, this goes back. Remember when we were talking about the canon, it's the same kind of idea, okay? Because Constantine upgraded Jesus' status almost four centuries after Jesus' death, thousands of documents already existing chronicling his life as a mortal man. To rewrite the history books, Constantine knew he would need a bold stroke. Constantine commissioned and financed a new Bible, which omitted those Gospels that spoke of Christ's human traits and embellished those Gospels that made him godlike. The earlier Gospels were outlawed, gathered up, and burned. So here's back to our original conspiracy theory idea. There was this conflict between the truth, quote, the truth that these guys are espousing, that Jesus was just a man, he was a good man, he was a prophet, he was a faith healer, itinerant Jewish preacher, and he was human, and therefore, and then everyone, the Gnostic writers, wrote about his human nature, and then the church formed, made him godlike. There was this conflict between the Gospels calling him God, the Gnostic Gospels calling him man, and Constantine just decided to put an end to the fight and decided that Jesus was God and burned all the rest of them. And so what you've got now is just the end result of all that political wrangling, and what you have in your Bible is not true. Sells a lot of books. Any comments, questions on that? Bring up the pop culture reference. And you do run into people a lot that still believe these things. And I guess the unfortunate thing about a book like this, even though you know as you're reading through it, it's fiction, you have people spouting history without really going into history itself and showing the other side of things. Okay. In summary, they say always leave them wanting more, I hope. So we're going to end up finishing up things tonight. We discussed in this quarter natural theology, establishing our worldview. Hopefully we took from that we have a good reason, good logic, good reasoning, good rational thought to believe that there is a God, that God exists, that it's not irrational to believe in God. A number of arguments, we don't just have one, we have many arguments that we can put together to see that God indeed does exist. Once we establish that worldview, then we can move on to things like science and the Bible. We have to establish that worldview first, and once we've done that, then we can look at what modern science has to say, where it possibly conflicts with the Bible and what the solutions to those things are. Looking at the modern theory of evolution, where its weaknesses are. And then moving on, looking at biblical evidences, looking at the charges that are laid that the Gospels aren't, the writings that we have aren't historically accurate or have contradictions or difficulties in them, and then dealing with a lot of these other items. So I hope that you have benefited from this. We're going to end up and have some time at the end. Are there any questions, comments on any of these things? You can spend some time now. If you've got wonderful things to say, this is the time. If you don't have wonderful things to say, you can email them to Melinda. And if he did not, I would be very surprised. And the thing is it is this entertaining drama thriller, and you've got this very nice sounding history. You know, because the guy, these are scholars that, I don't even remember the main character now. You know, this is a professor, this is a scholar that he goes to, and the scholar, you know, pronounces these things, you know, in a very dramatic way. And like, oh, you know, what you've all been told is wrong, and here's the way it really is. And you wonder how many people read that and go, oh, wow, that sounds good. And then they stop there. The dangerous thing is they stop there and they don't go, I wonder if there's anyone that's criticized this or taken this to task. Kevin. Very good. Any other comments? On a serious note too about the criticism, I tried to break this down into thirds with the natural theology and the science and religion and then biblical evidences. And of course, the trick is always to take that and try and fit it into the proper amount of time, giving due diligence and getting the high points and getting what I think is important. Okay. And so that may not necessarily be what I thought what the audience thought was important. And so if there were areas that, oh, you spent too much time on that, that really got laborious, you put too much on that, it became boring or repetitive, please let me know. I can trim that down. If there were areas that you were like, oh boy, I really wish you would have spent more time on that, then, you know, if I have, God blesses me that I can do this again one day here or somewhere else, I can make those changes, and make the evidences course even better. So again, I appreciate everyone's, attention, all of the comments. Jeff, did you have something? Sure. Very good. Anything else before we close? Again, thank you so much for your attention, for your comments, both in class and out of class. Been a great experience. Thank you for letting me put this together. I hope you may have gotten, especially the first sections on natural theology. I've been kind of itching for years to teach that. And so it was a great opportunity to put that material together and present it. And hopefully you benefited from it. So again, thank you so much for that opportunity. We are dismissed.